Salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the net control operator for the Limark Technical Net. It's been going strong for over 46 years now, and every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we sit in front of our radio, we chat with each other, we teach each other, we learn from each other, and hopefully we entertain each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this particular Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will return and give you the usual links. Okay, if you would like to reach me via email, one of my email addresses is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you would like to reach Paul and ask him a space-related question, ask him to take a look at a YouTube or an article that you read, you can reach him by email using his address, spacenetreport@gmail.com. We also offer a link page of interesting articles that I've seen throughout the week, and I cut and paste them and publish them on the weekend, and they'll be up for the foreseeable future. You can reach it anytime you want. Just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll get you to the link page. We offer an audio stream on the Internet of the Technical Net, and we keep it on the rest of the week so that you could basically listen to Glen Oaks, the repeater, if you have Internet access but you don't have a radio. The way to reach that is to type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll get you to the page, and that'll give you a little player so you can play the audio from the repeater. And I also want to remind everyone that Mike, KC2NJI, has a great archive site called amateurradio.tv. It has archives of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of many clever hams that have either moved away from the area or, unfortunately, through the years, become silent keys. Their wisdom remains on the audio files, and they're still very, very useful. So please check it out. Again, it's amateurradio.tv. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what we got scheduled. Okay, standard operating technical net tonight. No guest speakers. We will give you a short little bit of stories on the subject of artificial intelligence, because it's always making the news. And one way or the other, for good, bad, or indifferent, it's going to affect all of our lives. So we'll give you those little bits and pieces, and then things will be open to discuss anything that I mentioned or anything related to artificial intelligence. That's not the only way to talk about AI. Usually later on in the night, when the questions kind of dry up, people remember things that they wanted to talk about, and we usually re-enter the world of AI later on. But we'll see how it goes. So we'll do that. Once that's over, we will move on to the main segment of the Technical Net, questions, comments, and topics of interest. I will ask people to sign in, hit the push to talk, and give me your first name, your call sign, whether it's amateur radio related or science and technology. If it's a short subject, try and go first. If it's a long presentation, try and put yourself towards the end of the list. Hopefully that should take us approximately to 10:15, and Paul WS2N will join us for the SpaceNet report. That should take us approximately to 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So that's the plan, and hopefully if everything on my end and Glen Oaks and the repeater system is working, that's what we'll accomplish. We'll see. And hopefully I won't be thrown off of All-Star too many times. But if you seem to lose contact with me, give me a minute or two to kind of reset the application and get reconnected to the All-Star node. So that's the plan. Let me drop for a second, and I'll come back and give you a couple of short little bits and pieces about AI. Okay, some of this you've no doubt heard. Apple is suing OpenAI and two former employees for trade secret theft. So that should be interesting. OpenAI is continuing to test desktop-level agents. xAI has officially launched updates to its Grok assistant. And Meta was forced to scrap and remove its newly launched AI image alteration feature on Instagram following a swift public backlash over privacy and data scraping. In a major hardware milestone, the humanoid robot Atlas walked out during a live World Cup event match to hand the match ball to the referee and perform a goal celebration. So now we have to deal with robots. Anyway, a little tidbit, nothing dramatic. We all kind of sit there and watch what's happening to space. It seems to be slowly descending, but we'll see how things go. Any comments or questions at this point?
This is Kilowatt 2 November Echo. A quick question for you.
Sure, Sam.
When you have your articles posted, are they updated and changed every week? If you know what I'm referring to, I'm just curious if it's something that we should look at every week. Thank you.
Yes, I add to the list every weekend. So if you look at the list today, it has a new entry for this past week. But you could go down the page, and it has the previous week's history, links, rather.
Okay, thank you. I should say that perhaps, but I was curious because, you know, nothing beats news that's new news. Great, back to you, Roy. Thank you.
I agree. Although it's, some of it is more timely than other things. So there is still a benefit in some of the previous articles throughout the weeks and the months because they're not quite as timely. Some are, but I give you new stories, new articles every week, and occasionally YouTube if I find them particularly interesting.
Sounds like fun to me. I'll pay a little bit more attention to it. Okay, I like the idea, and I like your take in. You know, what's interesting to you is interesting to me. So, anyway, back to you, and I'll be around for a while listening.
Okay, very good, Sam. Thank you. Any comments, questions, answers, anything on the topic of AI anyone wants to poke up? Again, you'll have time to ask it again later on in the night, but as long as I bring up the subject now, it would be neater and cleaner if we handle it now. But up to you guys.
Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
Yep, how you doing?
Roy, just put me on the list for tonight.
Okie doke. Anyone else? Well, I guess no one wants to talk about AI at this point because we're already putting up the list. So if anyone has any questions or topics for discussion, comments, what have you, hit that push to talk. Give me your first name and your if it's amateur radio or if it's science and technology, and we'll put you on the list.
Entry Sheen, I'll do last one.
Okay, Rich recognized, West recognized. Anyone else wish to put their name on the list for tonight?
Roy, K2SDP, just a AI comment for you.
Sure, let me have it.
Thanks, Roy, and also, I'll reiterate your links on your website are fantastic. I don't know if people take enough, take a look at it enough. I look at it every week, whether I listen to the show or not, I do, and I love it. And not necessarily all the links. Some are good, some are not interesting to me, but the links that you link are usually very interesting, with other stuff popping up, so I always look at it. Let me drop for a second. So, in the last week, I put one of my parents into assisted living, and I found very interesting that you can have a camera put in your room, or the camera's there, but you can turn it on if you wish, and they have, nobody looks at the camera, so you have the privacy, no humans look at it, but they have it connected to an AI system that tries to detect issues. If the elderly person falls down or falls out of bed or is restless or something's going on, it will alert an aide to then go and check on that room to ensure everything's okay. And they don't get the video. The video is stored when something occurs like that. You keep 10 minutes of video or something just in case something does happen. They can then legally pull it up and refer to it, see what happened or whatever. But it was an interesting thing, and that's one of those things where AI may be helpful and do something, you know, helpful to humanity. I know everything else it does is usually nonsense, but I found that pretty interesting.
Okay, yeah, that is. It's a very good use for that technology, and relatively seems benign. I'd be curious of what its rate of false positives and false negatives are, because everything has some percent. So even if, you know, 0.0001%, nothing is perfect. A similar technology exists outside of the world of artificial intelligence, as far as I'm aware. There are motion detectors that are based on radar technology. Motion detection usually has two different technologies that it uses. One is just passive IR, but the much more sophisticated version and requiring usually plug-in power, because it takes up more power than passive infrared, is radar. They usually go in at something anywhere from about 60 gigahertz to 6 to 60 gigahertz. It supposedly features the ability to figure out the orientation of living people. It can tell the difference between animals and human beings, and it can tell when a human being has fallen down prone. So you can get somewhat similar results without even utilizing artificial intelligence. Again, I'm not sure what the false positives and the false negatives are. But as I've always said, I think artificial intelligence will be useful and will be profitable to a degree. I don't quite believe in the God computer to be. Not at least using generative technology as its means. But I'm looking forward to more acceptable modes of using it. As time goes on, people will find profitable venue for it. Not I don't think trillions of dollars worth, but well, time will tell.
Yeah. You know, as a software engineer with 30 years of programming experience, you know, it will get better over time for sure. But yeah, I'd like to see the false positives and negatives as well. And interestingly, I wrote software many years ago. Boy, I couldn't even venture a guess. Probably 30 years ago, probably, I'm guessing, to use radar to help a bank teller. You know, the drive-through, they had six lanes, and they had the cheapest way to do it back then. There weren't really video cameras out for it. It was like closed circuit. So they used radar to determine if there were cars waiting in line and how many cars and how many tellers they needed to pull from the regular area in the bank over to the drive-through area as it backed up. And we used radar for that. And I wrote a little piece of software that helped
run that system for them. But anyway, thanks anyway. K2SDP.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Chris, as always, for your participation. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight?
K2NE with a comment?
Certainly, Sam.
Well, as you know, I read the New York Times, and there was an interesting article today regarding the use of AI and Google searches, where people used to use Google to get answers to questions. And in the process of doing that, they would get a series of links and do some probing to find the answer to the questions they were asking, looking for on the Internet. Well, with AI now, they're starting to provide synopsis of answers to your questions where you really get the answer quite promptly. Let me drop for a second. As a result, they're saying that it's affecting the mind, the way people think, the ability that they refer to it as the pause between the question and the answer. And with the AI answers on the, on Google being foremost, the time lapse is almost non-existent, and they're saying that's affecting our ability to learn. In other words, because you do a search and you're searching, discover things that you may not uncover in the first instance and lead to other discoveries. So it was an interesting concept about AI, Google searches, and all that. Back to you, Roy.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it depends on what you want computer companies, search engines and such to do for you. You know, this is kind of like chewing your food for you. There's a lot of people that I've talked to about Google have been very upset about the decline in its, it used to be a much more preferred method of search engine. Over the last couple of years, especially with the inclusion of AI, it has generally been found to be wanting, and I find it so too. But, and yeah. I don't want my search engines chewing my food before me. I prefer to use my own set of teeth.
That's a very good way of putting it. That's exactly what they're talking about, that the chewing the food is being done for you. As a result, your teeth are rotting. Back to you, Roy.
Yes, indeed. It's rather unfortunate, but it seems like at least once a week I hear about a paper discussing that people's critical thinking processes have been undermined by the effect of too much exposure to chat bots and such. Because you got to stretch your muscles every so often, and unfortunately, again, AI attempts to accomplish that synthetically, either to the good or to the bad of the individual person's critical thinking capability. But, I think you need to stretch it a little bit more than it's being stretched lately. There's already studies that suggest that the college student's thinking is kind of not as sharp as it once was prior to them being able to grab an AI and pull an answer out of the air and just kind of hand it over to their teacher. So it's another negative aspect of artificial intelligence that I don't exactly know how you fix that. If you give someone a tool, people will try to use the tool as efficiently as possible and to lessen the amount of work that they undergo. You know, human beings have this kind of two-track thought process. One is quick and dirty, and often wrong. The harder method has a much better rate of success, but it requires more energy to accomplish. And so a lot of people simply take the gut approach. A lot of times they'll say they got their answer from their gut. Brains are far better than guts for answers to questions. But thank you anyway. Thank you, Sam.
As always, Roy.
Yes, indeed. Anyone else who want to put their name on the list for tonight, please stand up and push that push the talk button. Okay, very well. First on our list is Rich. What do you got for us tonight, Rich?
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, everybody. I had an amazing ham radio experience last night. There was a worldwide contest on. I forget the name of it, but I turned on my radio, and the waterfall was just lit up from end to end on the SSB and CW side also. So I started to see if I could make a few contacts, and with my 100 watts and my ICOM 7300 and no more than 100 feet of wire going up into a tree, I worked about 10 Western Europe stations, as many Eastern Europe stations, and a few Russian stations, and a couple down south in Colombia, and I forgot where the other one was. But it's astounding to know that on a regular night, there are maybe 4 or 5 from the United States, basically, that I could hear and communicate with. It just shows you how many or how much of the bandwidth is not being utilized on a daily basis. There are these contest stations that only come on during contests, and I experienced a lot of them last night. It was pretty amazing. I mean, anybody that I could hear, I could hear me. And it was just a lot of fun. It went till about, or I went till about 2 or 3 in the morning with it, and finally said that's enough. But it's amazing what 100 watts and a wire can do when the band is active. Let it drop a second. The other thing is SWR. I wonder why if I have a low SWR on a band and then I detune that to get a high, purposely to get a high SWR, why can I actually hear the noise of the radio and the strength of the signals drop out when I'm not transmitting anything? Or am I putting just a tiny voltage into the antenna enough for it to change its characteristics on receive only? Back to you, Roy.
Okay. I think you were working the IARU HF World Championship. Is that possible?
Yeah, that was it.
Okay, so we solved one mystery. Let's see. Let's go back to the very beginning. Yeah, the problem is that even though we have 750 million licensed amateur radio operators in the United States, the overwhelming majority of them are technicians and have very little access for most of the HF bands. And unfortunately, the people who have general and extra licenses, or a lot of them are getting older and older every minute. They're moving to HOA and other facilities that limit their access to putting antennas on the roof, and a lot of them do not operate even during contests. But especially there's greater motivation. There are some guys who are goal-oriented. They most likely do not want to spend a significant time rag-chewing like some of us love to do, but their goal is to either make contact at different locations and getting worked all states, worked all countries, worked all whatever to wallpaper their shacks, or points in a contest. So it's a good point of having contests. There are other people who don't like it because it upsets their general action. It clogs up the band you know, 3 or 4 days a year and just ruins their experiences. So, you know, we're all sharing these frequencies such. So, yeah, I agree with you entirely. It would be really nice if a lot of people dusted off their radios and got back on the air, you know, because ultimately if you don't use it, you lose it. And we're only, you know, we're lucky in that our frequencies, for the most part, have no incredibly significant value that microwaves have for all the different, you know, cellular towers and all the other industries that can, you know, buy frequencies for billions of dollars. As, let me drop for a sec. Okay, AC2GS here. As for your final question, it doesn't work like that. The impedance and the standing wave ratio counts both for transmitted signals and received signals. In that, if you are off the impedance, if you're not nominally 50 ohms to your transmission line, you get reflections in both directions. So when you transmit to a mismatched antenna, you'll get a lot of reflected energy coming back into your transmitter. But if you're equally off the impedance from received signals, even though they are microwatts, they will reflect back into the atmosphere and not be be drawn through your transmission line into your receiver. And although receivers are very forgiving and they require very, very small amounts of energy, they require some. And that's why sometimes people tune up their antennas by listening to the background noise. And when the background noise is the loudest, they know that they're approximately on a 1-to-1 SWR.
Yeah, so I guess you're saying that on receive, the microvoltages that are hitting your antenna system get louder, cause the background to get louder or quieter. Well, I knew that on the magnetic loop, but I never put two and two together that... The same thing would happen on a regular antenna or a wire antenna versus a magnetic loop. I thought that tuning for that background noise was only, you know, applicable to magnetic loops. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, the magnetic loops aren't, they're interesting, but they're not magical. They're intrinsically, stuck with the same laws of physics as any other standing wave antenna.
Yeah, well, I guess you answered the question. So what actually is happening? A signal or energy is coming into your antenna, and when you detune the antenna, that signal drops down. Is that roughly it?
Yeah, you get the most energy transfer in an antenna system when your impedances are all the same. When you have a difference in impedance from one portion to another, you get phenomena that can be considered the same as reflection. It's the same thing as, you know, atmosphere is, you know, oxygen, nitrogen, and it has a impedance, it has a refractive index. When the light waves hit the glass of a window, that's a different impedance. So there's a percentage of the light that gets reflected back out again, and you see the reflection as the surface of the glass. So an antenna that is perfectly attuned to exactly the same impedance from beginning to end will transfer the most amount of energy that it's able to grab out of the sky. As you change the impedances, you develop areas where the energy ends up getting reflected back out, which means it's not available for your receiver circuits.
Interesting. Very interesting. All right. Well, That answers that question, Roy. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome, Rich. Sure.
First of all, this is K2NE. I didn't catch that gentleman's call sign or name, but he was describing a very exciting day in ham radio yesterday. I had a similar experience that he described, and it's really quite exciting to see the band hopping the way they were hopping. The propagation was good, it was busy, and it reminded me of the good old days of many years ago when ham radio was very active. The question about antennas is this. I was exposed to Whoop River coil antennas, and I've been exposed to other antennas of a horrible nature. And I'd like to know, Roy, what makes a good antenna a good antenna? Why does they have a special reputation? Or, I mean, how do you discern what is a good antenna for mobile use? You know, POTA, SOTA, or hanging out at the beach? Can you give some parameters? Thank you.
Okay, Sam, by the way, that was Rich. His call sign is W2BZ. There's a lot of different criteria that go into a antenna. Unfortunately, some of it is pure marketing. You know, if you have some very clever marketers and ad buys, you can convince people that an antenna is a miracle device. Usually they're not miracle devices. They can be good, bad, or indifferent. But marketing, unfortunately, makes a difference. You can cajole or connive people into thinking that a mediocre antenna is much better than it is for years. There's many examples of that. But primarily, especially in the case of a portable antenna, you want something light and easy to set up, easy to break down. You want it to be as efficient as possible. You might want it to be higher gain, more directional, or in some people's cases, they may want to have something that's more omnidirectional. So those are the, and of course the price is important and availability is important. So at the top of my head, that's the first things that come to mind. I'm sure there are other things. So if anyone out there would like to add to the list of what makes a better portable antenna, feel free. Oh, well, I guess
for a portable antenna, I don't think you could beat a random wire.
Well, but that depends what you want. Again, if someone wants something that's relatively compact, that's not a random wire. And you're probably going to spend a significant portion of your time unwinding it and rewinding it. So it sort of fails that. It's an okay portable antenna. I don't think I would say there's anything intrinsically special. I mean, probably the best part of a random wire is it's probably the least expensive antenna you're going to find.
Oh, with any kind of vertical antenna, you have to worry about radials and setting up. I've done both, and setting up a vertical antenna with radials is much more time consuming than a random wire. You could use just 24 feet for a random wire into a 9-to-1 on, and you're ready to go. Use the coax as the counterpoise.
Okay, I mean, you can kind of say that of any horizontal antenna design. Again, I don't think there is the ultimate antenna. I think we're missing things if we try and anoint a particular model. And also it sort of depends what bands you use. Makes a big difference. If you're doing something, UHF, VHF, you can get by with the radio. They're not really going to add much, you know, they clip on or they screw on. So you can get away with a omnidirectional vertical antenna if your frequency needs are UHF, VHF. So there's a lot of different ways, and they're all kind of compromises. You know, if I could have any antenna that exists, I wouldn't probably pick an NFET. or a random lawyer, because there's far more efficient models out there. But, you know, it certainly is an acceptable model.
The thing I like about it is that it's tunable on all bands. And if you get the initial length of the wire right, what I use is 84 feet of wire. The way I raise it up in the air is I have a 25-foot telescopic whip that I just tie the top of the wire or the end of the wire to the 25-foot whip, and I raise up the whip. And that is in the ground with a ground spike. That holds that whip up. And then I just raise the whip up, and it goes up 25 feet, and then it slants down to my radio, or to the, I should say, to the 9-to-1 Unun, which is on about a 4-foot garden spike, or whatever you call it, and into my radio, and it works out just great for me. It's, you know, a 1 to 2, 1 to 3 SWR on all bands, and I get great reports, especially, and when I'm working portable, it's all the time, I'm out in a field or, you know, away from noise, electrical noise, and my little Zygu G90 gets very quiet, and I hear a lot more than I do from my home QTH with the same sort of setup, except at home, the wire is permanently in a tree about 50 feet up. W2BZ.
Sam recognized. We'll get to you in 1 second, Sam. Rich, you just described the vertical antenna, and you prefaced it by saying that yours is better than a vertical antenna. Keep in mind that you really need an antenna tuner for that, which is okay, but it has an additional device component thing to carry, and decreases the efficiency. So again, 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other. But let me get back, because I think Sam wanted to say something. Sam?
I was just wondering, you refer to it as a vertical. Is that not an inverted V? Is that an inverted V antenna?
No, I don't believe so. It's a whip with a counterpoise at the bottom.
Is the whip part of the antenna? I thought he was using the whip as a support type situation. But if that's part of the antenna, that's interesting.
Yeah, I believe the whip is part of the antenna. It's adjustable. If you have a better length to match all of your bands with, you can adjust the whip coming out. The problem with whips, as I've mentioned in the past, is they're capable of getting the edges getting corroded, and you start to develop noise on a whip. But you know, depending on how well you can keep it clean and what metals it's made of, it's a viable possibility. It's being marketed a great deal lately. The Parks on the Air activation movement has kind of taken on this guy's whip-based models. He tends to be a little effusive about he inventing basically the whip, basically a design that's been around for about 100 years, but okay. But it's been very successful. They've made a lot of sales, and they've made it very, very popular.
I use the whip solely to raise up the wire, you know, because there aren't any trees where I'm transmitting from. So I use the whip. The whip is not electrically attached to the wire. They're just attached with tape. They don't touch each other. And I just use it to raise up the wire. Go ahead, Roy.
So why would you need a whip? I mean, basically you're using it as a rope, unless something else is going on there.
No, because if you don't have a tree to raise up the end of the random wire or the end fed halfway, you need something else to raise it up. So that's why I have a 25-foot whip. And I just, I mean, the whip collapses into like 4 feet. So that's easy to carry around in the car. And then I have a stake on the bottom of it. It's attached to about a 3 or 4 foot stake, which I just pound into the ground. And then with tape, with masking tape, I just attach the end of the random wire to the top of the whip, then raise up the whip. Is that understandable?
Query.
Yeah.
The fact that the whip is not touching the wire of any significance, or is there an interplay between the whip and that wire, even though they're physically not touching each other?
I don't find that there's... I tried once to wrap the end of the wire around the top of the whip, but then that didn't give me anything, and I think it blew out a couple of bands for me. So I just... The end of the wire doesn't have, you know, any strands of wire coming out of it, so I just tie that to the whip. If you're talking about, is it because it's in such close proximity to the whip, because they're taped together, does that cause any electrical difference? That, I don't think so. Go ahead.
Okay, 1 second. I still don't understand. It was my understanding that the whip was electrically part of the antenna to tweak and adjust the electrical length of the antenna that might or might not improve the ability to match for different bands. The fact that you could collapse down the whip doesn't strike me as any benefit. If you use a piece of rope, you can coil the piece of rope down to the same dimensions. So instead of a slightly more expensive electrically conducting that will confuse the situation the way you have it configured, as opposed to a piece of rope that, you know, everyone ties their antennas up with a piece of rope, I don't see the benefit. It was my understanding, again, that the whip was electrically attached to the end of the wire itself to just give you a little bit more adjustability in the parameters that you need to transform the impedance to a decent visua.
No. I don't have any trees in the middle of a farm field, so I use the whip as a tree to raise the end of the wire, the random wire, up in the air. You know, the higher it up, the higher it is up, the better it is. So, I mean, I don't know how you raise a wire up in the middle of a field if you don't have any trees around.
How are you supporting the whip? It sounds like it's levitating in space.
Now, attached to the bottom of the whip is a mirror mount, and attached to the mirror mount is a ground stake about 3 feet long. And I just pound the ground stake into the ground about 1 foot or 2 feet, just enough so the whip doesn't topple over, and that's how I am supporting the whip. Go ahead.
Roy, he's out in Riverhead there. That's rural country, real rural.
Yep. It sounds like you're using the whip as just an extending mount, you know, like a boom. You know, like some might use a fiber. A carbon fiber or a pole, or others would use other types of poles, except this one is conducting and is going to couple to your antenna, probably.
Oh, there's no coupling. There's no electrical coupling. Nothing electrically is touching. Like I said, I tape the wire, the end of the random wire, I tape it to with a top of the whip, and then I raise the whip up. So as I raise the whip up, the random wire is going up and up in the air. And if they're not touching electrically, then I think they're not really interacting with each other. When I, like I said before, when I did try to strip back a little bit of the end of the random wire and wrap it around the whip to just test that, I didn't get any better results. In fact, I got worse results. So the end of the random wire is just taped to the top of the whip, not touching it electrically.
Comment, Roy?
Yes. One second, Sam. It's still capacitively coupled. You can go now, Sam.
All right, say something.
I don't
explain.
All I know is it works.
Coupling.
If it's capacitively coupled, so be it. But it doesn't change. It gives me better results like that than if it was electrically coupled to the whip. If I clamped the end of the random wire, with exposed wire to the top of the whip, where the wire is touching the whip, that tension on the wire, maybe that's where people are having trouble. This is insulated wire. So the insulation is what's touching the whip, nothing else. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's how capacitors work. So it's capacitively coupling. It's not identical to electrical connections. You can have inductive coupling, you can have capacitive coupling, and you can have direct contact. Keep in mind that it's probably the magic mostly takes place in your antenna tuner. Is this a commercial product, or is this something you put together yourself?
No, the whip, I could not put together a 25-foot telescoping whip myself. This is by Chameleon. It's a 25-foot whip. They also make them in carbon fiber, which I sometimes wonder if that would have been better for me, but this works fine. This works fine. The only problem is the weight of the random wire drags a little bit on the top of that whip, and the whip bends over a little bit more than I would want it to. But I still get a good 20 feet of height out of that whip when it's extended. And the reason why you need a telescoping whip is because if you're doing this portable, to put it back in the car, you got to collapse the whip back down to its like 3 or 4 feet size, so I could get it in the back of my car.
Okay, now I understand. It's just a substitute for the carbon fiber pole. It's just a quick and relatively inexpensive support mechanism for a vertical antenna.
Not so inexpensive. It's $100 for this whip. I think you could get them cheaper, like from China or whatever, but they're even thinner at the higher highs than the Chameleon. The Chameleon is fairly sturdy. As I say, at the top, it bends over a little bit too much for my liking. But this Wednesday, I'm going out with it, and I'm going to try to guy it with some rope at the top, some very thin rope at the top, guy it and take a little bit of the bend out of the whip at the top. Go ahead.
Okay. I said relatively less expensive than, I'm sure the carbon fiber is probably twice the price. But okay, it's merely a support mechanism. There's some degree of capacitive coupling probably, but a negligible amount to be too concerned with. So it's basically just a vertically oriented a random wire with your antenna tuner. So, okay, that's fine, but it's vertical. It's not a horizontal. It's not the standard method that most people that I'm aware of use for random end-fed antennas. They're just, mounted with anything. And they're usually... totally horizontal. But okay, again, I think it's a reasonable thing. I don't think it's a panacea. I don't think it will end the sales of any other portable antenna out there. But, you know, it's reasonably okay. And Chameleon makes very high quality products. They make military antennas as well, and you pay dearly for them, but they're well made. So I think it's a fine antenna. I don't think it's the best antenna ever made in the world. That's all.
Well, if you're working POTA or SOTA, if you look at the videos on YouTube, the only other way to use a random wire or NFED half-wave is to throw a rock or projectile of some sort over a tree and then pull the wire up that way. But like I said, where I go, I don't have any trees. So my whip is acting as my tree. My NFED half-wave at home in that last bad snowstorm we had finally came down, and that was put up in a tree about 40 feet by a guy who climbed the tree, and I could have asked him to do it again, but I didn't want to. He accepted no remuneration for it, so I built myself a launcher that I fill up with it's made out of PVC. I fill up one side of it with air, and then in the middle of it is a ball mount, like a water valve type of mechanism, and then 3 feet of PVC as the barrel, and I shove down the barrel this little weighted bag, and that's what shoots up in the air. And attached to it is my wire, and it works great. I mean, I had shots that were 90 feet in the air with this type of setup, but the last one I did was, it's about 60 feet up, and it works great. So now I have the end of my random wire at home up 60 feet in a tree, but like I said, POTA or SOTA or whatever, there's no trees. Bye.
I'm asked.
Okay.
One question, please.
Sure.
Rich, two questions. One, could that whip that you bought be used in and of itself as an antenna? Or is it sold for the purpose that you're using it for exclusively?
Absolutely. It could be used as a vertical antenna. Then you get into radials. And I find deploying 8 to 10 to 12 radials a big pain in the butt to get yourself to a quarter wave vertical. Plus, this whip will only get up to 20 meters, really. Is it 20 or is it 17? I forget. I tried it, and I didn't like it at all, and I did not like spreading out 10 to 12 wires along the ground, turning this into a quarter wave vertical. But absolutely, it could be used as a quarter wave vertical.
Thank you. As a second question, did you build a magnetic loop antenna from scratch yourself?
I just missed it. What do I build? What myself? Were you talking about the Anon?
Magnetic loop antenna.
I'm sorry. One more time.
Magnetic loop antenna.
Yes, I built about three magnetic loop antennas, and I love them, and they're great, and the noise is very low, except I've been spoiled with random wires and NFED halfways with tuners because I could just go from one band to the next and quickly tweak the SWR, where with the magnetic loop, that's not so easy because the bandwidth is so narrow have to, sometimes it takes more than a couple of minutes to get the perfect sweet spot for the magnetic loop. But when you do get that sweet spot on the magnetic loop, it's a wondrous antenna.
Thank you very much, Joe. Okay? I appreciate the rap. The Q-Sub very much. Roy, Sam is standing by. K2NE.
Okay, very good. So I hope you got an idea of different choices out there. There are a lot of them. And again, what's the favorite one tends to fluctuate dependent more than anything on the guys who are promoting the products.
Very true.
Okie doke. Anyone else out there with any good ideas for the optimal portable antenna?
One more thing, Roy. There's this whole debate about counterpoises with an NFED antenna. And what I found with the NFED half wave, using just the coax as a counterpoise, worked very well for me. However, with the random wire, I do throw out one counterpoise about 17 feet long. I think that's the calculation. And I'm pretty sure it helps a bit. But I could also use the counterpoise with the random, the coax as a counterpoise with the random wire. Other people say, you know, put out more counterpoises and then the better the antenna will be. Well, when I'm out in the middle of a field, I'm not like radials. It's to coil and uncoil 10, 12 radials is a lot of work. And that's why I use, for my portable setup, I just use the coax as a counterpoise. Go ahead.
Okay. Most people, get away with NFEDs with a single counterpoise, either a piece of wire as a real counterpoise, or if you don't supply the antenna with a counterpoise, it will simply grab your coax using common mode currents and supply its own. Now, when you bought this from Chameleon, they didn't include a wire, did they? It's just a whip that they sell.
Just a whip. I bought from Walmart the wire. I think it's 10 gauge, 100 feet for $15.
Okay. I can't even see any pictures of them using it the way that you said as a support mechanism. They seem to just kind of show it in different stages of disassembly and assembly. It's not really telescoping. It's folding, isn't it?
No, it's telescoping. It has about 6 or 7 sections to it that fold into each other when you lower it. And when you raise it, they come out of the thickest part of it. It's definitely telescoping.
Maybe I have the wrong picture. Is it the CHA Military Whip 20F?
I think it's a CHA 25. I think that's the model number. A 25-foot whip, or it's either 21 or 25 feet, but I think it's 25 feet.
Okay, I guess I have the wrong model. I see Military Whip 2.0, EXT 2.0.
I'll find it and I'll email you the link.
Okay, very good. I'd love to see it. Once again, let's try it. Anyone else want to recommend a portable antenna to Sam? Okay, well, Sam,